Hanium, number 22. December 31, 2023.
Since December 31, 2023, the Lion of the Tribe of Judah has been unsealing prophetic truths in a specific order. The order can easily be ascertained by reviewing the articles that have been posted on the website of Future for America. Over the recent months, the truths which have been unsealed are many and profound. The order is not random, it is purposeful. The sequence clearly identifies a purposeful sequential process that Christ, as the Lion of the Tribe of Judah, accomplishes as he unseals the final testing messages to the church and thereafter to the world. In the book of Revelation, the Lion of the Tribe of Judah takes the book that is sealed with seven seals and removes the seals one at a time, in order.
Will be disclosed in their order.
After these seven thunders uttered their voices, the injunction comes to John as to Daniel in regard to the little book, seal up those things which the seven thunders uttered. These relate to future events which will be disclosed in their order. Daniel shall stand in his lot at the end of the days. John sees the little book unsealed. Then Daniel's prophecies have their proper place in the first, second, and third angels' messages to be given to the world. The unsealing of the little book was the message in relation to time. The books of Daniel and the Revelation are one. One is a prophecy, the other a revelation, one a book sealed, the other a book opened. John heard the mysteries which the thunders uttered, but he was commanded not to write them. The special light given to John, which was expressed in the seven thunders, was a delineation of events which would transpire under the first and second angels' messages. It was not best for the people to know these things, for their faith must necessarily be tested. In the order of God, most wonderful and advanced truths would be proclaimed. The first and second angels' messages were to be proclaimed, but no further light was to be revealed before these messages had done their specific work. This is represented by the angel standing with one foot on the sea, proclaiming with a most solemn oath that time should be no longer. The Seventh-day Adventist Bible Commentary, Volume 7, 971.
The final revelation of the seven thunders was opened up post-2023, and it revealed that the seven thunders represent the first Alpha disappointment unto the last Omega disappointment. John was not allowed to define the seven thunders, for the revelation of the seven thunders was not a singular fulfillment of history, but an illustration of a delineation of events that took place in Millerite history that would take place again in the latter days. The perfect fulfillment was shown to illustrate the history of July 18, 2020, unto the soon coming Sunday law. The Lion opened that light up to shine upon the history of the erection of the Temple of the 144,000. In the Millerite history, the Seven Thunders represented 1798 unto 1844, when the Millerites presented most wonderful and advanced truths. In prosecuting the work they were given, the Millerites were tested. They did not fully understand the message they were proclaiming or the history they were fulfilling. The truths they proclaimed were what Sister White defines as advanced truths that were not to be understood until after the messages of the first and second angels had accomplished their work. When the seven thunders reached their perfect fulfillment, those future events are represented by the messages of the three angels of Revelation 14 in combination with the book of Daniel. The work of the 144,000, which is represented by the future events of the seven thunders, is combining the book of Daniel with the three angels.
The Lord is about to punish the world for its iniquity. He is about to punish religious bodies for their rejection of the light and truth which has been given them. The great message, combining the first, second, and third angels' messages, is to be given to the world. This is to be the burden of our work. The Seventh-day Adventist Bible Commentary, Volume 7, 950.
Since December 31, 2023, the Lion of the Tribe of Judah has been unsealing prophetic truths in a specific order.
Millerite History.
There are those now living who, in studying the prophecies of Daniel and John, received great light from God as they passed over the ground where special prophecies were in process of fulfillment in their order. They bore the message of time to the people. The truth shone out clearly as the sun at noonday. Historical events, showing the direct fulfillment of prophecy, were set before the people, and the prophecy was seen to be a figurative delineation of events leading down to the close of this earth's history. Selected Messages, Book 2, 101-102.
The order which Christ has been unsealing, the message of the midnight cry, represent historical events that show a direct fulfillment of prophecy that lead to the close of probation. The direct fulfillment of prophecy in the latter days is not a revelation of prophecies that are based upon time, but Palmoni still employs numbers to identify the direct fulfillments of prophecy. Time is no longer, and though the Millerites bore the message of time to their generation, the message of the third angel is stronger than time.
The Lord has shown me that the message of the third angel must go and be proclaimed to the scattered children of the Lord, and that it should not be hung on time, for time never will be a test again. I saw that some were getting a false excitement arising from preaching time, that the third angel's message was stronger than time can be. I saw that this message can stand on its own foundation, and that it needs not time to strengthen it, and that it will go in mighty power, and do its work, and will be cut short in righteousness. Experience and Views, 48.
The sequential order of the unsealing of the prophetic truths identify a progressive history, but they also identify the development of the message. The order of the history represented, and also the footsteps of how the Lion of the Tribe of Judah has been unsealing the message since December 31st, are both salvational to understand. In July of 2023, a voice in the wilderness began to prepare the way for the unsealing of December 31st, 2023. Then the Lion of the Tribe of Judah unsealed Revelation chapter 1.
Nothing else.
The solemn messages that have been given in their order in the Revelation are to occupy the first place in the minds of God's people. Nothing else is to be allowed to engross our attention. Testimonies, Volume 8, 301-302.
The articles that began in 2023 are to occupy the first place in the minds of God's people.
All that God has in prophetic history specified to be fulfilled in the past has been, and all that is yet to come in its order will be. Daniel, God's prophet, stands in his place. John stands in his place. In the Revelation, the Lion of the Tribe of Judah has opened to the students of prophecy the book of Daniel, and thus is Daniel standing in his place. He bears his testimony, that which the Lord revealed to him in vision of the great and solemn events which we must know as we stand on the very threshold of their fulfillment. In history and prophecy, the Word of God portrays the long-continued conflict between truth and error. That conflict is yet in progress. Those things which have been will be repeated. Selected Messages, Book 2, 109.
30.
The message of Daniel 11 verse 40 was unsealed and formalized in 1996. 30 years later, the hidden history of the very same verse is now being unsealed in connection with the formalization of the message of the midnight cry, a message that consists of a corrected external prediction of Islam in connection with a corrected internal message of the midnight cry. The message of the midnight cry is proclaimed before verse 16 Sunday law, for it is at the Sunday law where the door closes in the parable.
Peter.
This places Peter in the history of the sealing of the 144,000. Peter had a message he proclaimed in the upper room, and a message he proclaimed in the temple. The upper room message is the parable's midnight cry, and the temple message is the loud cry of the third angel. In order for Peter to proclaim the upper room message of the midnight cry, Peter's message would first be corrected and formalized. The correction and formalization are accomplished by bringing together the lines of prophecy the Lion of the Tribe of Judah has been identifying since December 31, 2023. The work is now to formalize the message of the Midnight Cry. The formalization of the message has been typified by William Miller in 1831 and the Time of the End magazine in 1996. The correction of the message that produced the first disappointment on July 18, 2020 has been typified by both Josiah Litch and by Samuel Snow. The work they each performed caused the effect that followed in the wake of August 11, 1840, and the wake of the Seventh Month Movement. In 1840, the message was carried to every mission station in the world, and in 1844, the message of the Midnight Cry swept over the eastern seaboard of the United States like a tidal wave. The work of men caused the effect of an outpouring of the Holy Spirit. 1840 went to the world, represented by the sea, and 1844 went to the United States, represented by the earth. The symbol of 1840 was Christ standing upon the earth and sea in Revelation 10. And that very chapter identifies the history of 1840 unto 1844 and portrays Christ standing upon the earth and the sea. In both 1840 and 1844, the adjustment to the prediction was an adjustment forward in time, to the perfect date. One was a prediction of Islam and the other a prediction of the parable of the 10 virgins. One was external and one was internal. 1844 also included an error of misunderstanding the sanctuary. Was the sanctuary the earth, or was it the heavenly sanctuary? The misunderstanding was even deeper than simply the definition of the sanctuary, for it also represented a test as to whether a soul would follow Christ from the holy place to the most holy place.
I saw the Father rise from the throne, and in a flaming chariot go into the Holy of Holies within the veil, and sit down. Then Jesus rose up from the throne, and the most of those who were bowed down arose with him. I did not see one ray of light pass from Jesus to the careless multitude after he arose, and they were left in perfect darkness. Those who arose when Jesus did, kept their eyes fixed on him as he left the throne and led them out a little way. Then he raised his right arm, and we heard his lovely voice saying, "Wait here, I am going to my Father to receive the kingdom. Keep your garment spotless, and in a little while I will return from the wedding and receive you to myself." Then a cloudy chariot, with wheels like flaming fire, surrounded by angels, came to where Jesus was. He stepped into the chariot and was borne to the holiest, where the Father sat. There I beheld Jesus, a great high priest, standing before the Father. On the hem of his garment was a bell and a pomegranate, a bell and a pomegranate. Those who rose up with Jesus would send up their faith to him in the holiest, and pray, "My Father, give us thy Spirit." Then Jesus would breathe upon them the Holy Ghost. In that breath was light, power, and much love, joy, and peace. I turned to look at the company who were still bowed before the throne. They did not know that Jesus had left it. Satan appeared to be by the throne, trying to carry on the work of God. I saw them look up to the throne, and pray, "Father, give us thy Spirit." Satan would then breathe upon them an unholy influence. In it there was light and much power, but no sweet love, joy, and peace. Satan's object was to keep them deceived and to draw back and deceive God's children. Early Writings, 55-56.
The sanctuary was identified as the key that explained all of the misunderstandings that were engendered by the misunderstanding of the sanctuary. It was the key that explained the disappointment. In the latter days, the key is the disappointment, which explains the misunderstanding of the temple. As of October 22, 1844, time is no longer, and the error of the disappointment of July 18, 2020 must now be corrected, but not in terms of time, for time is no longer.
And the angel which I saw stand upon the sea and upon the earth lifted up his hand to heaven, and swear by him that liveth for ever and ever, who created heaven, and the things that therein are, and the earth, and the things that therein are, and the sea, and the things which are therein, that there should be time no longer. But in the days of the voice of the seventh angel, when he shall begin to sound, the mystery of God should be finished, as he hath declared to his servants the prophets. Revelation 10 verses 5 to 7.
The location of the prediction that must be corrected is Nashville, Tennessee, and the location cannot be changed, for it is identified not by Future for America, but by Ellen White, and the spirit of prophecy never fails.
When I was in Nashville, I had been speaking to the people, and in the night season, there was an immense ball of fire that came right from heaven and settled in Nashville. There were flames going out like arrows from that ball. Houses were being consumed, houses were tottering and falling. Some of our people were standing there. It is just as we expected, they said, we expected this. Others were wringing their hands in agony and crying unto God for mercy. You knew it, said they, you knew that this was coming, and never said a word to warn us. They seemed as though they would almost tear them to pieces, to think they had never told them or given them any warning at all. Manuscript 188, 1905.
The internal issue of the fireballs upon Nashville is that it identifies that Laodicean Seventh-day Adventism knew of the Nashville warning message, but kept silent. This is the point in prophetic history where the shame or joy of the message of the midnight cry is manifested. This is the point that those who are to become the ensign begin to be lifted up in distinction with those who then being shamed by those in the world who are exasperated and angry that Laodicean Seventh-day Adventism gave no Nashville warning. This same prophetic distinction was represented at Mount Carmel between Elijah and the prophets of Baal, and in the history of the second angel of Millerite history, when the Protestants changed to apostate Protestants and began their role as the false prophet, becoming the daughters of Rome. In 1989, the political horn through Reagan did the very same thing. Only Reagan did not become the daughters of Rome. He became Ahab and Clovis I, paramours of Rome.
There was a scene presented to me. It was the night before the Sabbath. That is when that scene was presented. I looked out of the window, and there was an immense ball of fire that had come from heaven, and it fell where they were casting buildings with pillars, especially the pillars were presented to me. And it seemed as if the ball came right to the building and crushed it, and they saw that it was branching out, enlarging, and they began to cry and mourn, and wring their hands, and I thought some of our people stood by there, saying, well, it is just what we have been expecting, it is just what we have been talking about, it is just what we have been talking about. You knew it? Said the people. You knew it, and never told us about it? I thought there was such an agony in their face, such an agony in their appearance. Manuscript 152, 1904.
The disappointment of July 18, 2020 is the key to identify the temple that is to be lifted up as an ensign. The distinction of two classes of Adventists is a major theme of biblical prophecy. Jeremiah refused to join with the assembly of mockers, and the churches of Smyrna and Philadelphia were both contrasted with the synagogue of Satan, who claimed they were Jews, but were not. The distinction between the two classes of professed Adventists is represented by the methodology they employ to study the Bible. It is the distinction between true education and higher education, so-called, as Sister White calls it. Nashville is known as the Athens of the South, and the most famous building that represents Greece in Nashville is the Parthenon in Centennial Park, built in 1897 as a full-scale replica of the ancient Greek Parthenon. It was built to celebrate the centennial of Tennessee's entrance into statehood in 1796 and was intended to be torn down after the celebration. Instead, the land was turned into a park in 1903 and the Parthenon was rebuilt permanently from 1920 until 1931. The name Parthenon derives from the Greek word parthenos, meaning virgin or maiden, referring to Athena in her aspect as the untouched, wise, and warlike goddess of wisdom, strategy, arts, crafts, and civilization. Built between 447 to 432 BC on the Acropolis in Athens, it housed a massive chrysella fountain, gold and ivory, statue of Athena by the sculptor Phidias, essentially serving as her house or divine residence, where she was believed to be present. The Western educational system's emphasis on broad knowledge, critical inquiry, civic preparation, and the liberal arts framework is fundamentally rooted in ancient Greek philosophy and practice. Without Plato's Academy, Aristotle's Lyceum, or the Athenian Paideia, modern schooling as we know it would look very different. In 1904, the Madison School was founded 9 miles outside of Nashville. Ellen White was a charter board member of the original Madison School, formerly the Nashville Agricultural and Normal Institute, and later known as Madison College. She served as a charter member of the board of directors from its inception in 1904. She remained on the board until around 1914, the year before her death in 1915. This was the only college or institutional board she ever agreed to join or serve on. She deliberately limited such formal positions in other Adventist organizations, but made an exception for Madison because of its alignment with her educational councils, self-supporting, farm-based, missionary-focused training emphasizing Bible, manual labor, and practical preparation for service in the South and beyond. The Nashville messages from Sister White came in 1904 and 1905, the same time period Madison School was beginning, and the Parthenon exhibit was being changed into a permanent fixture at Permanent Park. The symbol of Greek education and heavenly education both marking their beginnings in the same short period of time, which was the same period of time the visions of Nashville's fireballs were given.
Last night a scene was presented before me. I may never feel free to reveal all of it, but I will reveal a little. It seemed that an immense ball of fire came down upon the world and crushed large houses. From place to place rose the cry, "The Lord has come! The Lord has come!" Many were unprepared to meet him, but a few were saying, "Praise the Lord!" "Why are you praising the Lord?" inquired those upon whom was coming sudden destruction. "Because we now see what we have been looking for. If you believed that these things were coming, why did you not tell us?" was the terrible response. "We did not know about these things. Why did you leave us in ignorance? Again and again you have seen us. Why did you not become acquainted with us and tell us of the judgment to come, and that we must serve God, lest we perish? Now we are lost." Manuscript 102, 1904.
The context of the Nashville messages was geographically placed into a spiritual setting of true or false education. An education that prepares a soul to be a citizen of either heaven or earth. There is no reference to Islam in Sister White's Nashville visions. So what would be the justification to attach Islam to the vision of fireballs on Nashville? How would a correction of the Nashville message of 2020 align with the work of Josiah Litch and Samuel Snow? Their corrections were made when they recognized that the same evidence that had led to the first prediction was the evidence that established the corrected prediction. The evidence of Islam was established long before it was connected with the warning message of Nashville. The message of Islam is directly attached to the message of the third angel. This fact is illustrated upon several biblical witnesses. The warning of the third angel represents a warning about the mark of the king of the north's authority, and the warning of Islam is represented by the warning of the children of the east.
"But tidings out of the east and out of the north shall trouble him. Therefore he shall go forth with great fury to destroy and utterly to make away many." Daniel 11, verse 44.
The third angel arrived into history on October 22, 1844, when the seventh trumpet began to sound. The seventh trumpet is also the third woe of Islam. The rebellion of 1863 silenced the sounding of the seventh trumpet until 9/11. When the third angel descended in Revelation chapter 18 as the great buildings of New York were brought down by a touch of God's power. 9/11 was the alpha or beginning of the sealing time, which ends at the omega or ending of the sealing of the 144,000 at the soon coming Sunday law. 9/11 is the alpha of the image of the beast testing time in the United States, which ends at the omega of the image of the beast testing time in the United States, which occurs when the mark of the beast is enforced in the United States. 9/11 is the alpha or beginning of the judgment of the living upon the earth beast, including its Republican and Protestant horns, which ends at the soon coming Sunday law. 9/11 is the alpha of the day of the Lord's preparation, which ends at the test over the day of the Lord's Sabbath. 9/11 is the alpha of the temple erection represented by the foundation stone, which ends when the omega capstone is placed upon the temple. 9/11 is the alpha of the third woe in the United States, which ends at the earthquake of Revelation 11, which is the soon coming Sunday law. At that earthquake, the third woe cometh quickly. The history of the Nashville fireballs is before probation closes at the Sunday law, in spite of the proclamation of those who condemn the Laodicean Adventists claiming, "Now we are lost." The book of Joel and its fulfillment at Pentecost set forth the debate of the message of the midnight cry, when one class who cannot understand the increase of knowledge accuses those who understand of being drunk. The confrontation of the drunkards of Ephraim and the wise is a subject that is often addressed in God's prophetic word. One element of the truth is that the message is a two-step message, as illustrated by Peter in the upper room and thereafter in the temple. It is represented by judgment beginning upon God's house, and then followed by those outside of God's house. The judgment process is also represented by the two voices of Revelation 18, where the first voice is 9:11 unto the Sunday law, and then the second voice of verse 4 marks the Sunday law. The distinction of the true and false prophetic message of the latter rain is also illustrated by Elijah, who Malachi identifies as returning just before the close of probation. The symbols of the wise and foolish on Mount Carmel was Elijah the wise and the foolish prophets of Baal. Elijah is Peter and the prophets of Baal are the drunkards of Ephraim. Once the foolish drunkards are manifested as the false prophets of Baal through the outpouring of fire, the people finally answer that, "The Lord, He is God." Laodicean Seventh-day Adventists are manifested as such at the fulfillment of the Nashville prediction. Those outside of Adventism who are then awakened to the unfaithfulness of the foolish are brought under conviction, but their probation has not yet closed. The illustration of the manifestation of the wise and foolish virgins represented by the Nashville warning message is a waymark in the final perfect fulfillment of the parable of the 10 virgins. The disappointment of July 18, 2020 defines the message which must be corrected and the manifestation of those within Adventism who have the oil and those who don't. Those who lack the message of oil that warns Nashville are then contrasted with those who do possess the oil. Of the two classes that either do or do not have the oil of the message, one class has experienced a disappointment that was represented by the first disappointment of Millerite history. The other does not have that experience. Without the disappointment typified by the Millerites, there is no correction to be made to any failed prediction. The fact that the Nashville prediction of 2020 was identifying Islam is consistent with an element of a failed message which needs to be corrected. An evidence of this is found in the fact that the history where the fireballs of Nashville arrive is not only that it agrees with the history of the Millerites' first disappointment and the correction of the message thereafter, but also because it occurs within a history that begins with the arrival of the third angel on September 11th, marking the arrival of Islam of the third woe, and that Islam arrives prophetically again at the Sunday law earthquake of Revelation 11. Retaining Islam in the message without any direct reference by Sister White to Islam and the Nashville warning is based upon the theme of the history being Islam. In the 153rd article of the series titled The Book of Daniel, we identified that in agreement with the testimony of Balaam and the ass, Islam, represented by the ass, would have three primary interactions with the United States in the history of 9/11 under the Sunday law. We identified 9/11 as the first, then October 7, 2022 as the second. We noted that the first attack was on the spiritual glorious land, and the second attack was upon the literal glorious land of Israel, and that the third attack would be the attack at the earthquake of the Sunday law. We pointed out that the history of Balaam at this prophetic level bore the signature of truth, for the first and last attack was upon the spiritual glorious land, and the middle attack was upon the literal glorious land, which is a symbol of rebellion. We now see that a fourth strike, which marks the beginning of the midnight crime message, will take place in the spiritual glorious land when Nashville's fireballs are fulfilled. This means that the second strike of Balaam and his ass is double with the first of two strikes upon the literal and the second upon the spiritual glorious land. The article presented an incomplete truth which the Lion of the Tribe of Judah has now revealed as another witness of the prophetic connection of Islam to the fireballs of Nashville. Another argument to support the association of Islam with the fireballs is found within the Reform lines of sacred history. Every Reform movement has its own peculiar theme unto itself that permeates the entire Reform movement. In the Reform movement of Moses, it was about entering into covenant with a chosen people. With Christ's Reform line, it was about the Messiah. With the Reform line of David, it was about the Ten Commandments and the sanctuary. With the Millerites, the theme was prophetic time, for the Millerites bore the message of time. With the arrival of the third angel at 9:11, the theme for the reform line of the 144,000 was identified as Islam of the Third Woe, the Children of the East, the Ass of Bible Prophecy, the War Horses of Revelation 9, the East Wind, the Locusts, and the Angering of the Nations. The earthquake of Revelation 11 marks Islam of the Third Woe, while also representing the conclusion of the message of the Midnight Cry. The Midnight Cry was typified by the triumphal entry of Christ into Jerusalem, which began with the releasing of the ass. The beginning of the Midnight Cry in Millerite history was the arrival of Samuel Snow on horseback at the Exeter camp meeting. The beginning of the period of the Midnight Cry is marked by symbols of Islam. There is abundant witnesses to confirm that the corrected message of July 18, 2020 includes Islam as part of the warning message. There is not a date identified, but Nashville's fireballs identify the controversy of new wine in the latter days. So Nashville's fireballs include Islam. But what about the identification of the fireballs as nuclear weapons? The message must retain the designation of Islam as the antagonist in the attack based upon many witnesses. The error of time setting which needs to be corrected is typified by both 1840 and 1844. Time is no longer to be part of the prophetic message, though numbers still are. The error represented by the sanctuary misunderstanding must also be resolved. But before it can be resolved and incorporated into the corrected message, the error which was typified by the sanctuary misunderstanding must be identified. What did that sanctuary misunderstanding represent in the July 18th Nashville warning? I contend that the answers are to be found in the light that has been being unsealed since the end of 2023. The three parallel lines of 11 chapters, beginning with chapters 11 and ending with chapter 22 in Genesis, Matthew and Revelation are the renewal of God's covenant with the 144,000. Do we reject his offer of mercy by acting as if we did not hear his call, or do we bow down and proclaim in our human strength, "All that he commands, I will do"? Or do we allow the Holy Spirit to write his law upon our hearts and minds? The answers are also found in Daniel chapter 12's unsealing of the three verses that present time as the first, second, and third angels' messages. Those three verses also mark December 31, 2023 in verse 7, July 18, 2020 in verse 12, and then 1989 unto the Sunday law and unto the close of probation is represented in verse 11. Those three truths within those three verses are located in the very passage of Scripture where the threefold testing process that always occurs when a prophecy is unsealed is set forth. Christ didn't simply unseal Daniel 12's threefold test, but he also identified those tests as a foundational test, followed by a temple test, followed by a litmus test. He further identified the foundational test began on December 31, 2023, and was based upon the foundational test of the Millerite movement, as represented by the Antichrist being the symbol that establishes the external vision. He then identified the second and temple test, as represented by Daniel's vision of Christ in the temple in chapter 10. That test is currently underway. Daniel 12's unsealing of the dates of 1989, July 18, 2020, December 31, 2023, and the Sunday law includes the vision of Rome and the vision of Christ. Both visions are set forth in the very same vision where the unsealing of chapter 12 is found. The three chapters are one vision, and the vision of Christ is the temple test in chapter 10. The vision of Antichrist is the foundation test in chapter 11, and the waymarks of the 144,000 in chapter 12 represent the third and litmus test, where the foolish are separated from the wise as many are purified, made white, and tried. The temple test opened the light of Leviticus 23, which was the light of the Ark of the Covenant, which is the Alpha light of the seventh-day Sabbath and the Omega light of the seventh-year Sabbath. The light of the Alpha and Omega Sabbaths identify the light of the Incarnation. That light identifies God taking human flesh for the purpose of restoring the combination of divinity with humanity, which is the work which Christ began on October 22, 1844, the work he is now concluding in the judgment of the living. The light of Leviticus 23 brought together the Alpha Spring Feasts with the Omega Fall Feasts to produce the very history of December 31, 2023, through to the close of human probation. Within the line, the foundational test is marked as arriving on December 31, 2023, and the temple test is identified as beginning in 2025, which continues until the litmus test of the Feast of Trumpets. The voice in the wilderness that began in July of 2023 is marked by the Feast of Unleavened Bread that ended 5 days after the waymark of three parts. Then a 30-day period which was followed by a waymark of three parts that was followed by 5 days, thus illustrating the three steps of the everlasting gospel. The Alpha waymark of three parts followed by 5 days being the first angel, the 30 days being the second angel, and the Omega waymark of three parts followed by 5 days to the Sunday law of Pentecost is the third angel. Christ also opened the light of Leviticus 23, constructing the Ark of the Covenant in the temple testing time. The message or angel of the seventh-day Sabbath on one side of the Ark and the angel of the seventh-year Sabbath on the other side of the Ark represent the covering cherubs looking into the Ark. In the history of the sealing of the 144,000, the dual light of those two angels represent the seventh-day Sabbath and the doctrine of the Incarnation represent a subject that will be studied for eternity. Of course, if you aren't able to see the seven times as the symbol of the Jubilee, the Spiritual Emancipation Proclamation of 1863, then you will not see that the Alpha and Omega prophecies of William Miller were the seven times and the 2300 days. Not being able to see the significance of those two related time prophecies prevents any recognition that 1798 represents the seven times and 1844 represents the 2300 days. With that lack of knowledge, it would be virtually impossible to see that when Leviticus 23 is brought together line upon line, placing its first 22 verses that set forth the spring feasts with the last 22 verses of the fall feasts, that the line begins with the seventh-day Sabbath represented by 1844, and the Sabbath that ends the line of 44 verses is the Sabbath of the land represented by 1798. The inability to see the relation of the two Sabbaths represents the inability to see that the seven times of 1798 is humanity and the 2300 days of 1844 is divinity. With a blindness that deep, it would seem virtually impossible to recognize that the Alpha light of the seventh-day Sabbath and the Omega light of the doctrine of the Incarnation is identifying the work of Christ in combining his divinity with fallen man's humanity. The work of Christ in combining his divinity with our humanity is the work of combining 1798 with 1844, for 1798 represents human flesh and 1844 represents divinity. Humanity was created in the image of God, possessing a higher and lower nature. The higher nature of man is carnal and sold to sin. Christ gives a converted soul his mind at the moment of conversion, for conversion is where justification takes place, and to be justified is to be made righteous. The lower nature cannot be redeemed instantaneously, and the gospel promise of the lower nature is that we receive a glorified body at Christ's return. The higher nature is the mind, and the lower nature is the flesh. The higher nature is the prophecy of seven times that concluded on October 22, 1844 on the Day of Atonement when the seventh trumpet and the Jubilee trumpet both began to sound. The seven times of the lower nature ended in 1798, for it cannot be renewed until the second coming of Christ. The seven times of 1798, the seven times of 1844, and the 2300 years of 1844 represent the work of Christ that began on October 22, 1844. That work was to combine his divinity with humanity. But when the temple that is made up of humanity and divinity was to be united in 1844, 1798 was not to be included, for it represents the courtyard of the Gentiles. The temple test includes the measuring of the temple. And early in the history of the unsealing that began in 2023, the unsealing of the seven thunders identified the history of the first disappointment to the great disappointment as the final and perfect manifestation of the history represented by the seven thunders, which Inspiration says represent the events that transpired during the history of the first and second angels, and also of future events that would be disclosed in their order. The perfect fulfillment was placed within the framework of truth that was one of the first revelations that came in 2023. The disappointment at the beginning represented the Omega disappointment, and in the middle was the Exeter camp meeting where the wise and foolish were separated based upon the oil of the message. The Temple of the Millerites was erected from disappointment to disappointment. Thus, identifying the Temple of the 144,000 is erected from July 18, 2020, unto the soon-coming Sunday law where the door closes in the parable, just as it did on October 22, 1844. The history represented by the seven thunders is the same history represented in the light of Daniel 12. The light of Daniel 12's 1290 days directly connects to the 30-year period that is represented in verse 11. It is also connected in the 30 years that are distinguished by the first representative of the covenant with the chosen people and the prophet who was raised up to identify the change of covenant relationship of literal Israel to spiritual Israel. The 30 days in the middle of the framework of Leviticus 23 is the same 30 years of the first step of Abraham's threefold covenant with God. The 30 years from 508 to 538 in verse 11 is a symbol of the priesthood of the 144,000. The 30 days in the Leviticus 23 structure are part of the 40 days Christ taught his disciples face to face until he ascended. 30 is a symbol of the priests who would begin to serve at 30 years of age. The 30 years of 508 unto 538 identify the transition of pagan Rome unto papal Rome, and in doing so they identify the transition of the Laodicean priesthood of the 144,000 unto the Philadelphian priesthood of the 144,000. The transition takes place in three steps as represented by 508 when the daily was taken away, the decree of Justinian in 533, followed by the Sunday law of 538, as the transition was finalized. Those 30 years represent 1989 unto the Sunday law, where God sealed Philadelphian people, will as his temple, be lifted up for all the world to see. The world will then judge between Christ who is represented by his people, who are seated in heavenly places with Christ, and therefore are in the temple of God, or with the man of sin who is seated in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. At the soon coming Sunday law, the 11th hour workers, who are also the great multitude, will be confronted with a foundational test. Is the seventh day Sabbath God's Sabbath, or is the day of the sun God's Sabbath?
And now another scene passed before him. He had been shown the work of Satan in leading the Jews to reject Christ, while they professed to honor his father's law. He now saw the Christian world under a similar deception in professing to accept Christ while they rejected God's law. He had heard from the priests and elders the frenzied cry, "Away with him! Crucify him! Crucify him!" And now he heard from professedly Christian teachers the cry, "Away with the law!" He saw the Sabbath trodden underfoot, and a spurious institution established in its place. Again Moses was filled with astonishment and horror. How could those who believed in Christ reject the law spoken by his own voice upon the sacred mount? How could any that feared God set aside the law which is the foundation of his government in heaven and earth? With joy Moses saw the law of God still honored and exalted by a faithful few. He saw the last great struggle of earthly powers to destroy those who keep God's law. He looked forward to the time when God shall arise to punish the inhabitants of the earth for their iniquity, and those who have feared his name shall be covered and hid in the day of his anger. He heard God's covenant of peace with those who have kept his law, as he utters his voice from his holy habitation and the heavens and the earth do shake. He saw the second coming of Christ in glory, the righteous dead raised to immortal life, and the living saints translated without seeing death, and together ascending with songs of gladness to the city of God. Patriarchs and Prophets, 4:76.
The great multitude, who are Gentiles and one-hour laborers, are tested by a foundational test that is immediately followed by a temple test. Is the human temple of Rome with the man of sin going to be the rock or the sand which you build your faith upon? Or is it the temple of the incarnation, which is divinity and humanity combined, which is the temple of the 144,000 that Peter calls a spiritual house? In that period of testing of the foundation and temple, the persecution will accomplish the litmus test of the third step, and then human probation will close. The Lion of the tribe of Judah is now filling in the hidden history of verse 40, and has introduced even more light with the 350-year prophecies of Cyrus, Nero, and Trump. And he did so in the very time when he had emphasized the work of proclaiming the corrected message of Nashville. Nero's line provides the framework of the final setting up of the image of the beast in the United States, and then the world. Cyrus' line of 457 BC identifies the history between Raphia and Panium, the history between the Ukrainian War and the Third World War that begins as Panium combines with Actium at the soon-coming Sunday Law. Trump's line ends this year on July 4th. Nero is a symbol of persecution. The Church of Smyrna identifies the history that continues until persecution ends 250 years later at the Church of Pergamos in compromise. The line identifies the setting up of the image, and therefore aligns with the history when the image of Christ is being set up in his temple. The edict is the starting point that leads to the first Sunday Law that is followed by the closed door of division between East and West, wise and foolish, wheat and tares, and the saved or lost. The edict that begins the period is also the edict that begins the same testing period for the world. The edict is therefore the first and the last. Every waymark of Nero's 17-year line is identifying the escalating persecution of the Sunday Law crisis that begins with an edict, something of the order of a presidential executive order. Cyrus's three decrees of 457 BC identify a 17-year period with three waymarks at the end, as does Nero's line and as does Cyrus's other line, that ended with the arrival of the first, second, and third angels from 1798 unto 1844. Cyrus's three steps are the Battle of Raphia, then 10 years to the second step, and then 7 years to the Battle of Panium. The beginning and ending are both battles, thus bear the signature of the Alpha and Omega. The first period of 10 years represents a period of testing that began in 2014 with the Ukrainian War, and the second period ends 7 years later at the Battle of Panium.
Palmoni
unsealed the message of time to the Millerites of the first and second angels' history, and he unseals the message of numbers in the history of the 144,000, which is the history of the third angel. The symbolic prophetic histories, such as the 22 years from 1776 unto 1798 represented by the Maccabean Revolt, identify the cause of the Sixth Kingdom's beginning and the cause of the Fifth Kingdom's ending. The 22nd president, Grover Cleveland, was the Alpha of presidents, typifying the Omega president of Donald Trump, as the only two presidents that served two non-consecutive terms. Trump is the 22nd president to win a second term, when counting the other presidents who took over in a previous president's term, together with the presidents that won a second term for themselves. The Sixth Kingdom of Bible prophecy began in 1798, after the 22 years from the Declaration of Independence. 1798 unto 2026 is represented by 22 at the Alpha date and 22 at the Omega date. Three lines of 11 chapters that begin with the 11th chapter and end in the 22nd chapter. Each of the three 11-chapter lines contain an exact middle point represented by three verses. Genesis identifies when circumcision was given as the symbol of a covenant relationship with a chosen people. It was the first time a chosen people were given a sign representing a covenant people. And in Matthew, the center three verses identify the rock on which Christ would build his church. Those verses identify when Simon Barjona's name was changed to Peter, which equates to 144,000. The middle of the line in Revelation identifies the covenant of death, as it identifies the papacy as the eighth head, that is, of the seven. What do you suppose the implications are that chapter 11 in the Desire of Ages identifies the message of John the Baptist, and that chapter 22 identifies John's death? The middle of those chapters takes you to page 168, where the chapter titled Nicodemus begins. Chapter 11 is titled The Baptism, and chapter 22 is titled Imprisonment and Death of John. Chapter 11 is a symbol of death, burial, and resurrection, as is chapter 17 and Nicodemus, and as is the death of John. We will continue these things in the next article.